This is Pro Bono Radio. Hi, I'm Waylon.
I'm Michelle.
And I'm Adam.
And today we're going to be talking about video games, gambling, and the law.
Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about, some people call them loot boxes, otherwise they're, referred to as loot crates, loot chests, lots of loot.
And some sort of container to hold it.
Exactly. It's some kind of container-esque noun. And basically what it is, for our listeners out there, if they're familiar with them, but they were in the news a lot last year. It's a consumable virtual item that you receive in a video game that inside is an unspecified amount of items that could be cosmetic items or that could be actually useful to the game. But the main conceit surrounding them is that there's a different amount of probability for the items that you can receive inside. And based on what that probability is, you might receive a rare item, a common item, or an uncommon item. Sometimes that you actually need a secondary consumable item to open them, which are keys, and you have to buy the keys or win the keys through playing the game. And that's the basic idea.
It is pretty amazing how prevalent they are. I mean, just thinking about some of those games, like Pokemon Go is one, you can get them. I feel like Fortnite sort of thing has them. Even games like NHL, all the different versions of them with their online game and card system. It's just... And that's not to mention like all of these downloadable games for your cell phone and anything you can sort of buy through the app store. And then, like you said, it's all random. You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah. And exactly. I think the thing is too, is that, the kind of the more insidious or sinister thing that people are concerned about in the media is the fact that, often you're paying for these. I mean, some video games for sure, you just win them, while you're playing, and then it doesn't really have any effect one way or the other, but, I guess the type of, common and the kind of loot box that makes the most money is the kind that, you actually have to pay money to unlock. And then, I guess the general concept that people are worried about is the fact that, basically there are items inside that have certain probabilities assigned to them, and some of them are more valuable than others. And then, you have, video game consumers out there playing who realize that they can spend more money to have a higher probability of getting what they want. And so that's where the concerns around gambling begin.
Do you think this is gambling? Because, I mean, when you're playing a game, even if you're not paying to play, as many games almost require you now, or if you want to be having any success at the games, you kind of got to pay for some of these upgrades and unlockables. But is it that much different in a concept than when you could just play a game and you beat the boss or whatever to unlock the chest, and then your payout is random, or games where maybe you have to like raid a bunch of dungeons and your loot and the stuff that you can acquire is random to begin with. So it's not like you were able to pick from the get go. Is that leap enough to turn this into a form of gambling, or is it kind of just an extension of video games and their history?
I mean, it's hard to tell. I think that traditionally video game consumers have been among probably the most vocal consumers of any industry ever, and they like to make their voices heard on certain issues for sure. So I think that the idea that you're not actually, it's not a part of the game that makes sense, or, that they work into their plot or their gameplay or anything like that, and instead it's something that you get outside of that. I think that that's probably what gets people's hackles up. And, I guess something interesting to think about is just maybe the idea of it being gambling is the best way that the law can actually conceptualize what's going on, because it could just be something totally new. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I do think that it is gambling. And I think for me, it does boil down to the fact that you're paying and you don't know what the outcome is going to be. Like, you're paying. And I mean, There is an assured outcome to an extent. And like you said, some of them will sort of specify your probability ranges before you purchase something. So it's like, if you buy this box for $1.99 on the App Store, then you're guaranteed to get 5 items, and you're guaranteed that at least one of them will be of uncommon or higher rating. So you have an idea of what you could be getting, and you know you're going to be getting something. It's not like a bet where, say, you're betting on a team to win. It's not like sports gambling, or it's not like buying a scratch ticket in that at the end of the day, you could just end up with nothing. But at the same time, yeah, you're paying for an unknown outcome. And I think that's part of the allure. Like, to me, the allure of doing this and the allure of gambling is very similar in that, like, you're going to pay a little bit, but you could get something that makes it, like, hugely worth the initial investment. And I feel like just that kind of attitude and that kind of, like, you know, you're hooked on the possibility of getting something great. That makes it kind of very gambling-esque to me.
To me, it kind of reminded me of slot machines, because you put in like a dollar or whatever, a small amount of money, and then it's kind of random, but also still a machine that's deciding whether or not all the slots line up and you win something. Mm. And there is that element of surprise, like it's all exciting and the things are moving, so that's kind of cool. But I also think it kind of depends on the game. I mean, I haven't played a lot of these ones, but if a game has an end that's foreseeable, then I don't know. I think there might be an argument for it not being gambling, because you're buying something and you don't know what it is and it might help you, but then the game ends, versus games that kind of go on for a really long time and you're always doing it constantly. I think that's a little bit more gambly.
Yeah, and I think your point on being comparable to slot machines is actually part of where the uproar is coming from. I know in the UK it was sponsored by the EU's Commission on Gaming. They did this big paper on comparing these loot systems to slot machines. And they found that a lot of the similar gimmicks that casinos employ to kind of get people to sit and, you know, pull the lever over and over and over again are the same ones that get people kind of hooked on these loot boxes. Because it's never just, you know, you just click one button and all of a sudden, you know, what you receive appears. There's always an animation, a big ceremony, a lot of colors, bright lights, music playing, that kind of thing. And then it's always exploded onto your screen in graphic and glorifying detail. And so I think that the people who've designed it, I think, know exactly what they're doing to get people hooked. And I guess, I mean, I think that these kind of systems, they're not ancient, you know, but they're not particularly new, I guess, by, you know, technology standards. I think that the first recorded kind of system like this was in 2005 or 2006. But I think now we're seeing a lot of them more because it's digital downloads for video games are very, very accessible. Any kid could take it on, you know, their parents' iPad and go onto the App Store and download something. Or people use, you know, Steam or other kind of platforms like this where it's very accessible to have these systems going all the time where people are always online. And I guess that brings me into the next phase of the discussion, which is, I think personally that one of the reasons that people are so up in arms about this is that obviously the target demographic for, a lot of video games are children, obviously. And so I think that there's kind of a protect the children from gambling narrative going on. And so I was hoping to ask you whether or not you think this is just a moral panic or whether you think there's actually some concern here.
I think that some of the concern is merited for sure. And I think sort of going off of what Michelle said about there being a difference with some of these more open-ended games, even ones that do have a storyline, it seems that that's becoming more and more just a part of the gaming experience. And like online gaming or games that like repeat. I mean, they might have, I think of Fortnite, for example, where they have a game with a story mode. I've never played it because I just do the online and it's the same every time, but it's different. And I think the point you're sort of making, these games, the developers, like, it's become more than just about building a game, but it's about building almost like a platform for people to connect. And you have to have a way to keep them coming back to what you're offering, right? And so a lot of games, I feel like, are starting to adopt these like almost psychological approaches where it's like, okay, we'll give you rewards. So every time you like log in on a separate day to play our game, we'll give you a little reward. Or, you know, we'll have these unlockables or these achievements that are, they range in difficulty. They get more difficult, but there's going to be enough of them that are easy enough to complete that every time you play these games, you're setting yourself up for a reward of some type, right? So you log on and it's okay, get two eliminations and we'll give you a bunch of stars and experience points. And so you're sort of programmed to keep coming back to these games, keep achieving those rewards, keep hitting those points and have it build up. And it's like an addiction almost. You're going back to get that reward. And now you add the spending money element where it's like, okay, I can get all those. But then if I'm willing to spend $5 a week or something, I can get all these extra bonuses or I can get these crates, this extra loot where, it might be something rare that nobody else has, or it might be something that's going to help me further down the game, or it's going to help me play the game easier, have more success at it. And it's just, you're almost caught in that loop of just the game keeps calling you back all the time.
Yeah. I know that there's a few ostensibly free to play games out there. I think of Steam is a really, really popular application that people use to play video games, and it's got a huge user base of all different kinds of ages. And I think one of the flagship video games that they have is Dota 2, which is free to play game. And I know that I think one of the big issues is that the items that you can receive from this loot system, where you have to receive the crates, you know, as you play for free, but then you have to buy keys to unlock your different crates. And then the thing is that as you play, you get them. And I remember I lived with a pair of brothers when I was in my undergrad, and they were very, very into this game. And, you know, kind of blew my mind sometimes, because I thought for a while that the items they were buying were making it easier to win the game, which, you know, probably not in the best sport, but it makes sense, I guess. But the items they were buying had no effect whatsoever on gameplay. They just made their characters look cool, which, you know. To each their own.
Obviously, that has a huge appeal, right? Like, you just have to look at Epic and all the money they've been making on all of their, like, Fortnite skins and items and stuff. None of it changes the way the game is played at all. It's 100% cosmetic, and yet people are willing to spend billions, like, yeah, with a B, billions. It's crazy. You make so much money off of, like, I don't know, what is it? It's probably a few lines of code to design, like, a slightly different look for
or
a player.
Dance or something like yeah. that. Yeah. I can only imagine it. And I think the thing that, about this other game, Dota 2, I think the big thing was that it wasn't just items that you could keep in the game, but you could also, because Steam has this virtual marketplace and has all the infrastructure set up to buy and sell games, you could convert the items that you had, into currency by selling into real world, you know, cold hard cash by selling them to other people who are using Steam, who are using this application. And so the concern was that, you know, people who realize there's the possibility of, if they keep playing, winning crates, and then possibly that one of those crates has it, you know, their ticket out of there, the next big item, and so they keep buying keys to then be able to sell those items on the market. I guess, though, thinking back to when you guys were kids, do you guys remember, were there any kind of panics around an issue in video games that the society felt like the law should be involved in at the time?
Well, I'm a little bit old. So I remember, like, the Mortal Kombat controversy. And I mean, and violence in video games, I feel like that's been a kind of a staple. Mm. There's always been sort of outcry on, you know, you go from Mortal Kombat up to, like, Grand Theft Auto. Just any game where you're allowed to sort of engage in, like, antisocial behavior or violent behavior, and just the effects that that has on the people playing it. But, like, with this type of stuff, it's not that the concern necessarily is that we're inciting some sort of antisocial or violent behavior. It's self-destructive now. It's more just like your inability to not spend money on these unlockables or on these games, and getting to a point where you're playing so much and trying to unlock all these things, and like that you're neglecting everything else.
Yeah, I remember growing up and there was the huge panic about violence, and I think that was related to the school shootings that started happening, and they said that the shooters played violent video games. But there's so much debate over that. There's things that show that maybe it does cause violence, and then other, you know, experiments and stuff that says that it doesn't. I don't know. I think it's more just the person, who might be weirdly violent and also happen to like video games. But I also remember, and this is like a little bit not the same thing that we're talking about, but speaking of, you know, addictions, do you remember having those little Tamagotchis? Like, yeah, the things that you had to feed all the time? And it was with real time, so if you didn't feed it often enough, it would actually die and you'd have consequences. And I think that if you then throw money involved in that, like, you can see how it's really easy to get addicted and to always have to go back to the games, even if they're just like a cute little fake animal or whatever they were.
Yeah, when I was in elementary school, one of my teachers said that we all looked like we were running out for smoke when it was actually all the kids running out to the hallway to make sure their Tamagotchis weren't dying, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when they banned them from our class, it was a crisis because everyone's kept dying, and it was
malnourishment among the Tamagotchi community.
Their blood is on the school district's hands. Yeah. So recently, the idea of loot boxes, because it's kind of had so much, I guess, public outcry, there's a few big, very publicized games that were coming out with these systems. And I think there was the newest Star Wars game that EA put out, there was a kind of a controversy because they said that you didn't need to pay to unlock everything in the game. You could get it through the loot system, and you didn't need to use the loot system to get all the content in the game. You could just get it through playing, and someone worked it out, and you needed to play something like 1500 hours or something to actually unlock the things that you would just have to buy otherwise. So
you could do it, but it was very unlikely that anybody would.
Exactly. And so, that is, you know, this wasn't just like, you know, some weird cell phone game that was on, you know, the Google store or whatever that people were downloading and then, you know, play for 5 or 10 minutes or whatever. This was a very huge title with a $1 million budget and all kinds of things behind it.
And probably a pretty expensive, like, starting price point just to play you know, like, you're going to spend $60, $70, $80 to download this game just to begin with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then, yeah, to have to spend, you know, even like $5 here, $10 there, and it all adds up quick. And before you know it, this has turned into a $200, $300 video game, and it's all basically the same thing that you paid for originally.
Yeah, and I mean, that idea that you said, I think that was getting people really hot under their collar. And so then you started kind of see movements to actually push legislation around the world to kind of deal with stuff like that. I know in China, Japan, Australia, the Netherlands, Belgium, and parts of the UK, like the Isle of Man, they've just placed loot boxes, you know, just totally part and parcel under the under gambling law and regulating them. And I think the most dramatic case is Belgium, where they've just been totally banned outright. They actually blocked the sale of this Star Wars game that was inciting all the controversy. And I think actually the consequence I have here is any kind of loot box system that allowed users to convert the items into real currency has become heavily regulated, with violators able to face a fine of up to €800,000, or, you know, like, I guess like one copy of the game if you're using loot boxes. That's a joke. But I mean, the most obvious exemption from that rule, though, are games where they still have the same system where you can still pay, but where you just can't convert the items back into currency. So like I was talking about earlier with Steam, and so would try and get your guys' opinions on whether you actually thought that was effective or not, whether it dealt with the problem or.
It's interesting to me that they seem to be most concerned with games where there's a secondary market. Like, it's almost like the concern isn't necessarily the gambling aspect of it, but the fact that probably they aren't getting a cut of these sales. Mm. Like, there's no sales tax when you buy something on the Dota and I'm sure there's a lot of money that's changing hands. So it's just kind of interesting to me that maybe that is more of the incentive to get involved than the actual gambling protections. But yeah, I like it. It kind of makes sense. I'm a little curious because it does feel like just general societal attitudes towards gambling are becoming a bit more liberal. Mm-hmm. I believe that the states recently, the Supreme Court decision basically legalized gambling, sports gambling, I know for sure. Just the fact that gambling is here, it's around, it's going to be regulated to an extent, but just the whole concept of it seems to be becoming more and more acceptable. And yet, and maybe it is because video games do have that association with younger kids or children, but it's just kind of interesting that that's the area where there's pushback, when in other areas it seems to be more free-flowing or more permissible now.
Yeah, and I guess it kind of goes into that old age-old debate about how paternalistic, you know, we should trust the law to be. If a kid wants to spend, you know, $900 getting Fortnite dances, you know, who's to say that, you know, we shouldn't, you know, let him spread his wings and fly, right? But then it's, you know, there's the obvious thing that there's plenty of studies that show the psychological impact of gambling and, you know, its addictions. And maybe that's something that we need to, you know, protect people from, but
certainly not encourage in our youth, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that'll be interesting now too, especially the kind of intersection of, now that, you know, video games are becoming a huge market, maybe esports for actually just consuming in the same way that one would watch pro sports, there's going to be a very, very, I think, big convergence of different types of gambling that are going to go on there. So
yeah. We're already starting to see it for sure. I mean, like, I know there are a few websites out there now where you can bet on the outcome of an esports match. I feel like I've seen it for like StarCraft, and I'm sure there's other games that are amenable to it too. And like, yeah, like you said, right, like that is a growing area, growing industry. So it'll be interesting to see how the law sort of reacts to gambling, maybe within those sports as part of the games themselves, but also on those sports and like the outcomes of the matches.
Do you guys think that industries could be trusted to self-regulate in this case? Do we need the law to step in?
I think that if you do classify a like gaming and buying stuff with it as an addiction, it seems unlikely that it would be self-regulating. Just because when it comes to addictions, usually people become vulnerable when they become addicted to something, and then the people that are supplying it don't necessarily want to help them recover in that sense. But I guess it would depend on how you classify it, right? Because there has to be some sort of incentive for the gaming companies to regulate, and if they're just making money off of it now, it seems to me that they probably wouldn't care as much. So I think you might need legislation to step in. But it's kind of a new area, so I'm not really sure what that would look like, really.
And if we start seeing warnings on video game packages, like we do with like packages of cigarettes or something, like warning may cause addiction, like lead to lack of sleep, irritability. Like
those pictures of the teeth that are all, you know, messed up.
Yeah, we'll just get pictures of like the guys that live in their mom's basements. It's like, this is where you will be in 20 years if you keep playing video games.
So I guess like, you know, like we were saying, video gaming and, you know, video entertainment, obviously huge industry, has been for quite some time. It's only going to keep getting bigger. In your guys' opinions, do you think that this is the best issue to be spending academic and legislative energy on? Or is there something else more pressing that maybe we should be focusing the debate on?
I feel like because of the topic, maybe being video games, that it is kind of assumed not to be as serious. But then you look at the numbers, you look at the people who are playing, and like video games are impacting a lot of people's lives, even if it's just to a minor degree. Like, I don't think everybody's spending hours a day gaming or anything like that. But I feel like a lot of people have game systems, like a lot of people play here and there even. And like you said, just the fact that they're so accessible, we can get them on our phones, like kids can grab their parents' iPads and just are a few taps away from a whole host of games. So just the fact that they are so prevalent to me seems to merit at least a watchful eye. I think to echo what Michelle said, it's hard to regulate companies that are interested in the opposite of what you're trying to get them to do.
Yeah. And I also think that if you look at how many people play them, I mean, it's just sort of something that we consider to be like leisurely activity. So, you know, not that important, but so many people play video games and they've come into our lives so dominantly and so quickly. If you think about how quickly and how much more they're going to be in our lives for, you know, the next generations, I think it is important to sort of look at the impact that they're having on our lives now so that, you know, we can make sure there's no other hardships in the future for, you know, years to come.
Mm-hmm. I think that like the rise of esports is going to have a really interesting effect on that as well, because now you can make money playing video games, right? Like you could be the next Tyler Blevins or whatever, Ninja. Like that dude's made bank from playing a video game. And if you're good, it's hard to maybe tell. Like I used to think I was good at video games until I started actually playing with other people. Right. But like, I don't know. Maybe just that appeal, or just the fact that you can kind of convince yourself that there is a greater outcome. You know, it's like, it's almost like it's playing a sport. Like if you're a bubble player, you know, you have the talent to go semi-pro, and you think that if you just practice a bit more and, you know, like build your lifestyle around that, that it can be your livelihood. It can be a future for you. And just the more that those opportunities exist, I think it's going to increase, because there already is, you know, risk of addiction, and it already is easy to get addicted to video games and spend a lot of time engaging with them. But if you also have that element of being able to tell yourself like that, maybe this is going to pay off down the road, it'll be the same thing where it's very hard to be a professional anything. Just the competition, the numbers of people you have to separate yourself from are so great that it could end up just being, you know, you're 24, you thought you'd be on the professional Stargate team, and now you're not. And then what do?
Tragic story. Yeah. I think that's also kind of indicative of, I guess, something larger, which is I don't think that a whole lot of legislators at this point necessarily, just because, you know, different era, different people grew up doing different kinds of things for leisure, I don't think necessarily they grasp all of the implications around certain issues. And like you were saying, there's an incentive now for kids to play video games beyond just the fact that it's fun. You know, there's the new American dream of being the next Tyler Blevins or whatever. just playing and playing and getting better. And so I think that's part of the same kind of thread that might be affecting what we're seeing now with loot boxes. You know, it's an approach that I think needs to largely be influenced by popular opinion and academia, because I think a lot of legislators right now on their own are unaware of some of the issues surrounding this kind of entertainment. So it'll be interesting to see what the future, I guess, holds when the people and the lawmakers grow up themselves, you know, or are from a different generation themselves and are affected by different issues.
That's it for today's episode. Pro Bono Radio is brought to you by Queen's Faculty of Law, Pro Bono Students Canada, and with the generous support of CFRC, Queen's Campus Community Radio Station, broadcasting at 101.9 FM and online at cfrc.ca. The show was written and produced by the students of Queen's Law and is intended for entertainment purposes only. We are not lawyers. Nothing contained in the episode should be considered as legal advice. If you are in need of legal advice, please consult a lawyer. Pro Bono Radio is recorded at Queen's University, situated on traditional Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee territory.